The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I mean, we could be in Philly right now. Well, it probably looks like this. But we could have our quarterback and our star wide receiver beefing, Mike.
That one is just mind-blowing. And then you've got a longtime veteran on the team going, yeah, shut up, AJ. I'm sorry, AJ. What I meant to say is that we're all entitled to our opinions, and I was out of line. Man, you got Radio Gold on ESPN up there in Philly from one of the players that gave you the whole this sort of spilled the tea, only to walk it back. And it's like, yeah, AJ Brown, why are you making a beef? You got a 9-game win streak. Roll with it. Go to your position coach. Go to your OC. Right? Why do you put it out there in public, man? And that was, I mean, you won the game. Yeah, it was an ugly game against Carolina. What could you do better? Passing game. What?
Brandon Graham is who did it.
That's it. Brandon, I couldn't find the name. Brandon Graham is the guy. And he walked it back after saying, shut up, AJ.
He suggested that they were once boys.
Now they don't talk.
That's literally what he said. He said, the person, I love this, the person that's complaining needs to be accountable. Okay, that's AJ. And he says, I don't know the whole story, but I know that Hurts is trying and Brown could be a little bit more responsive with how he's handling things. So, yeah, Brandon Graham, one of the OGs in that locker room. I just find it interesting. Like, here we are complaining, and rightfully so, about what our offense is not doing, how we're turning the ball over, penalties, blah, blah, blah. These fools are in a 9-game win streak, and you got the quarterback and the star wide receiver going at it in you know, conversation with the media. And by the way, Nick Sirianni today came out, Mike, and said, well, I didn't take it that way.
Christian said in my ear, that's why they wanted him out. No, they wanted him out of Tennessee because the owner didn't want to pay for him.
That's right.
That was Bud Adams' daughter who took over his ownership up there in Tennessee. And by the way, Tennessee team is so meh. Somebody's just going stuck in neutral right now. And Will Levis, you know, the highlight of Will Levis' career was that game against us.
Calvin Ridley got his debut. 90. Calvin Ridley got his 90.
And by the way, did you see Ridley has been a bust? And you talk about a zero on high tops. Did you see, you guys saw some of the highlights this week? There's a critical third down. And Ridley doesn't even have any situational awareness and goes out of bounds, a yard short of the first down marker. Mm. It was just literally people are the announcing team was incredulous at it. But yeah, that's been a big lack of production for that money.
Yeah. Well, they got a lot of issues. Here's what I'm getting to. It could be worse. Like, that is a better situation from a win-loss standpoint, and hopefully they can work that out. But I got to tell you, when you have internal stuff like this, like, we're just not playing good. You can play better. When you have internal strife like this going on and guys not wanting to talk to each other and then you got the split locker room, and this, trust me, can be a problem. Well, this will destroy you.
This would be akin to after the game in Minnesota, if they got a mic in front of, you know, I guess our because Mooney is relatively new, it'd be Drake London. Drake London would be the guy with the experience, and they go, yeah, this offense isn't working. Quarterback's a problem. And that would boom.
Exactly.
You know, but of course, in Philly, because of, you know, all the media and everything, everything's magnified, and they're always looking for this kind of juice, and this thing always seems to happen around Philly every year.
It's unbelievable. This hour is brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors.
Hi.
We're Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Thanks for listening to Atlanta's number one sports station, its number one sports show. Let's get to an NFL Blitz. So let's talk about last night, shall we? Bengals, Cowboys. 27-20, First of all, Ja'Marr Chase is that dude. He's him. 14 receptions, 177 yards, 2 touchdowns, and the last one put the Bengals up for good. And, Mike, he was talking about Joe Burrow, who is having an MVP-type season. Listen to Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, honestly, man, I still think he has a chance, even though our record's not talking great. But, man, he just shows his poise in the pocket. You know, he shows how he keeps the play going in the pocket, moving around back there. He's been doing jump passes this year. So he's been doing it all, man. He's just a outstanding quarterback back there.
And he's taking a beating, by the way.
I mean, in the trenches, we talk about how bad their defense is. And, I mean, did you see that first touchdown for the Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb? It's like, you know, you may want to get somebody on CeeDee Lamb. You know? And by, ironically, I was watching the Simpsons broadcast on ESPN+.
What'd you think?
Well, they actually, it was funny, that they actually had Homer Simpson instead of Cooper Rush, that little, they all looked the same. All the players pretty much looked the same.
Okay.
But they had actually Homer Simpson threw the ball to CeeDee Lamb for the touchdown. If you're watching the Simpsons broadcast, it was actually pretty funny. Yeah, but I mean, the Bengals right now at 5-8. I mean, they literally need everybody in front of them to drop dead. Yeah. I mean, they've got the Colts, Broncos, Dolphins. Everybody's in front of them. They've really got no way unless all those teams lose out, basically, to make it. And they've got to win out.
Let's hear Micah Parsons talk about the block punt. If, for those who missed it, Dallas blocks a punt. All they had to do is stay away from it.
It's like, think of the when the field goal attempt is blocked to the extra point, just stay away. Stay away. Randy McMichael said, there's a code word, it can be whatever it is, poison, whatever, get away from it.
Hot, fire, red, whatever. They didn't do that. They touched the ball, and then they fumble the ball, and then the Bengals get it back. Obviously, the Bengals win. Here's Micah Parsons talking about it.
I wasn't even really grasping what was going on. Nick made a great play, and then, you know, I asked the ref, you know, explain what happened, and he told me that we touched the ball. It was definitely a huge momentum shift. I mean, we just caught a huge stop. We're going in a 2-minute drill. It's just real hard to, you think to believe you could pull that game out from that situation. That hurts.
They had Jerry Jones in the Simpsons broadcast in the owner's box with Mr. Burns.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, and all in real life, though, Mr. Burns looks more like Jerry Jones than Jerry Jones.
Yes,
true.
Smithers, yes.
Jerry Jones,
I would say, why block the kick? Just take the kick and get in field goal range and kick it. After blocking the punt, we touched the ball. That all should be figured in before you decide to block the punt.
So Jerry Jones basically saying his team shouldn't have tried to block a punt. Because somebody on the team, one guy, didn't know the rules. Brother, he's lost it. I mean, we've all have older people in our lives, grandparents, great uncles. He sounds as crazy as my Uncle Lou.
Yeah.
And if you're my Uncle Lou, you wouldn't let him run a football team.
For those of you who are old enough, 1993, Thanksgiving Day, Cowboys Dolphins. Texas Stadium, the old Texas Stadium.
In the snow.
Where the roof was open so God could watch the Cowboys. And Leon Lett inexplicably slid in the snow attempting to cover a field goal that had been blocked, and everybody knows to this day it's one of those plays that you watch it now and you're like, I still can't believe that happened.
Right.
Cowboys end up losing the game.
It's a dead ball, basically. If the defense doesn't touch it, it's whistled dead. The offense can't advance it. The only way the offense can advance or the kicking team can advance is if the defense touches it and fumbles it.
That's why everybody's looking at this and going, you live this already. Like, if any franchise should know, it should be you guys. Let me hear Micah Parsons talk about holding, you know, Joe Burrow to 20 points. Of course, it was 27-20. He threw that last touchdown to Chase. But Parsons is like, look, we held him to 20 points.
Tell me we hold Joe Burrow to 20 points and 2 minutes left with our offense, the way he was moving the ball today, I think we could win the game.
Yeah, and they did not. It's Dukes and Bell. It's our NFL Blue. Let me hear Jerry, Mike, because this is him talking about holding them to 20 points and his opinions on the game.
If you'd told me that going into the end of that fourth quarter, all they had was 20 points, I would have taken that with a smile and said, if we can hold them to 20, that gives us our best chance. And we did that. So I thought our defense played really well tonight on balance. Played well enough to win. And obviously, our offense played well enough to win. There's three phases. You got a special teams phase, and that cost us.
Yeah. John Fossil, by the way, Jim's brother, is the special teams coach of the Cowboys.
Cowboys lost linebacker Demarion Overshun.
One of their better players.
And when I saw Micah Parsons leave the field and he's crying, and I'm like, is he taking it this hard? Like, it's been a bad season, bro, but like, really? it was more about injury.
Right.
And so now I have a little bit more perspective. But in the moment, I was like, he didn't shake hands. He didn't go.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
See anybody on the opposite team? He just went straight to the locker room and was distraught. So Cowboys lose. We know this has been a terrible season for them, but it's the way that they're finding ways to lose. Let me hear the block punt, last but not least, as we talk about last night's Monday Night Football game. Next week, we are on Monday Night Football.
That's blocked! And picked up by Cincinnati out across the floor. The offense comes back onto the field for Cincinnati. Here's the block.
Yeah, the block is made, and then someone, I didn't see who exactly
ruling
it was.
On the field, on a kick play, the ball was touched by the receiving team beyond the line, and then recovered by the kicking team.
Can't do it. Can't touch it. It's simple. Let it go.
Man, I tell you what, though. Listen, I want to get some of this luck that I'm seeing other teams have. Mike, we haven't had that kind of luck this season.
Well, you make your own luck. And you got to, you know, whether it was the blown call, I mean, with the Chiefs and the no pass interference call on Pitts in the end zone. Again, ball was thrown at his hip. If it's a high point touch, maybe the refs call it. But that's one of them. Then you had the Bengals pass interference. Then you had the Chargers refs. The refs have been a big part of the Chiefs season. Then you've had the breaks. You had the doink to win the division on Sunday. So they've had a million things, but it's Patrick Mahomes making plays. But it's hard to imagine the Chiefs beating the Bills if they can't score any points. They're keeping almost every game that you watch the Chiefs are under 21 points.
All right, as we talk about what's going on around the NFL, here's what people are saying around the country outside of Atlanta. Is it physical or mental with Kirk Cousins? Is it physical or is it mental?
Bit of both. You're not showing up on the injury report. As you know, you can't monkey around with the injury report. If there's something there, you got to put it out there on paper. So is it the confidence? Has he lost his confidence? He makes a bad throw. Pitts is open. Pitts could have had a touchdown that could have changed the game, but he throws it behind him. Throws it on the wrong hash mark. Doesn't throw it down the middle, right straight down the middle. We've talked about him. Look, I go back. I think everything started in the Saints game. The Saints where he started missing Mooney, started missing balls high, and then everything's kind of snowballed after that. Chargers game, he needed one play. Couldn't make it.
I do think it's a little bit of both right now because the mental is affecting the physical and his inability to put the ball where he needs to put it. Wes Durham is going to join us next. Wes Drewham on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk to our man, Wes Durham, the voice of our Atlanta Falcons. It's Dukes and Bell on a Tuesday. And Wes, it is always good to talk with you.
What's up, guys?
Hey, man.
We're doing good. Just trying to figure things out as we continue to move forward with this football team. We do want to talk a little college football playoff with you, as now we know what this looks like. But let's start with last Sunday. First of all, I don't even want to say underrated because I've been there and I said this all week. Like, their fans show up, but that's a tough place to play, isn't it?
Are you talking about Vegas?
No, Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, Minnesota. No, Minnesota's a real deal. Minnesota's legit. Yeah, absolutely legit. And here's the thing, and we said it on the air a couple times. They were in the seats like when the national anthem was played. I mean, like, in the seats. Because Dave and I both looked at each other after the national anthem was over. I'm like, these people are here. I mean, they were on site and ready to go and locked in and in the chair. And the same thing happened that started the second half, too. I mean, they were like when they – and I know how halftime gets away from people.
Right.
Mike.
Right. I don't even get it. That's part of the reason why I sit where I sit, because the bar is literally right behind the aisle. So it's time critical. Boy,
strategic planning.
Thank you.
Strategic. I love it. Good preparation on your part. Win before you play the game, Mike. The idea of that place, though, is it's a great environment. I would say this. I told somebody this last night. It's now on my list that if I were to tell you, like, everybody always asks me, hey, you do all these great college games, you've done the NFL, it's, and I've told you guys, I've just been blessed to do it. I tell everybody to go to Green Bay, tell everybody to go to Arrowhead, and now I would tell you go to Minnesota.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, it was something to see. And, you know, one thing that we talked about is, you know, we get the pass rush, but we just don't get the pass rush when it really mattered. Explain to me what it looked like from the booth. I know what it looked like from television. It looked like Keystone Cops with the secondary. One of the ball that was deflected. But, I mean, what's going on? We got some really good veteran coaches that coach defense and secondary on this team, too.
Well, I put it on – I mean, people kind of knew where we were based on – I put a quick story on the Instagram, my Instagram account Sunday to show everybody we're kind of in a corner there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it puts us in a unique angle. So when the ball goes floating down the field away from us or towards us, you can kind of tell whether it's going to be caught. Is it going to be a competitive play, whatever. And the ball, the first touchdown he threw to Justin Jefferson, I mean, when I saw Mike Hughes corkscrew himself on the ground, I went, oh, no. Hughes turned the wrong way on the ball, and there was nobody else there. So it was just a matter of, you know, how long did he want to take to get in the end zone? Yeah, the coverage on the back end on the explosives was really, really not good at all. You're right about the pressure, and to be honest with you, that's the second straight game we've seen really solid pass rush pressure. I think we said on the air, first time in better than 5 years, they've had four more sacks in back-to-back games, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel good about where that is, but the explosives crushed them. And, you know, Atlanta, once again, the defense and offense didn't marry one another, which I know is disappointing for Raheem and his staff, because you didn't turn your possessions into touchdowns. You turned a couple of them into field goals, and against a group like that, you got to be turnover free, and you got to be touchdown present in every possession you get.
We're talking with Wes Durham, the voice of our Atlanta Falcons, as we discuss our team in the midst of a 4-game losing streak. We get Vegas on Monday night. We're trying to figure out how to get right, and, you know, the penalties were also a big part of this, right? I mean, look, the interceptions and, you know, that stuff is one thing. The penalties, 127 yards? Wes, you're not going to win many football games doing that.
No, and Dave made this point, and I don't agree with him. I mean, I don't disagree with him on this. All of a sudden, and I said this on the air, somebody must have said something to someone, you know, before the game about holding.
Mm-hmm.
Because – I mean, if you look at it, Atlanta had twice the number of holding calls in the game that they had. I mean, maybe three, four times what the average is per game, right?
Right.
I mean, when they came into the ball game, they were, I think, close to single digits still in holding calls during the year. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're getting five and six in a game. What in the hell? So somebody must have said something, or Alex Kemp's got this crew that is zoned in on a specific, you know, piece of the game where they're going to call holding. So that was frustrating. And then, again, I'll go back to the turnovers, because you maximize the turnovers. And really, let's be honest, you're 21 all, mm-hmm. and you go down the touchdown, and then all of a sudden you fumble a kick. And you fumble a kick in a one-score game, that's a death nail. And the third touchdown is just gravy for the Vikings. But those are the turning points for me. The penalties were certainly out of character and something we had not seen all year. So that was frustrating, I know, but at the same time, too, the turnovers and the missed ops were certainly frustrating, I think, even more so in determining the game.
Yeah, that's the thing, Wes. I mean, you could argue that especially some of the holding calls, one on Lindstrom, that's garden variety. You could call, I mean, I know we say it all the time, you could call it on every single play, and the game would take 5 hours to play if you did so. But I've never seen holding on a defense on a field goal attempt. That was a new one for me.
That's a beauty. Alex Kemp and his crew must have, like, the Zapruder of, you know, interior holding working for them or something, because they're looking for something that no other crew in the league's looking for, in my opinion, Mike, when you see stuff like that.
But again, as we said, as Wes Durham joins us, you know, unfortunately the game flipped and you couldn't match. I thought Pitts, you know, there was one where out where it was not a great route on the TV broadcast. Olsen talks about it. He drops the pass, but then Kirk has it wide open, but he doesn't throw it down. I guess Arch would know more about this, Wes, but he throws it behind Pitts. If he throws it right down the middle between the hash marks, we had a touchdown, and we're not talking about Pitts not being a factor on this team.
That's it. Yeah, you're exactly right. I think the missed ops, again, we talk about them in literalness of penalties and turnovers. I think they're also in execution, and I would concur with you on that, too. I think, you know, the symmetry and the rhythm that they had offensively early in the year has kind of gone by the board here a little bit. That's something that now with where we are, and let's be honest about this, guys, these last four are going to all count now, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a way that maybe we haven't thought of before. And so I think, you know, you got to, if you're Raheem and your staff and your players in that locker room, it's not as much about who you're playing now, although that's pretty important. It's really about getting it back to that standard that you had going early in the season when you were, you know, feeling good about yourself and winning some ball games.
Do sacks matter?
Yeah, I think so.
I do too. But you know, we complained all these last few weeks about not enough sacks, and they'd get them, and we're still not winning. It's like, what is the deal? Like, I get it. It's timely sacks, right? That's what I've been saying. It's when you get them. But I still want more. It's not like we can shut it down. I still need more sacks on Sunday or Monday against the Raiders. But we got them, Wes, and it didn't matter.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Last 2 weeks, right? Frustrating. But, you know, let's see what happens here going forward. But, yeah, when I looked at that note, you know, you hadn't had four or more in consecutive games for the first time in, what, 5 years, Carl? Maybe longer than that? Yeah, that's one of those where you shake your head and go, well, damn, we got the sacks, but what good's it doing?
Right. And we'll ask Coach on Thursday. We have to wait till Thursday because the Monday broadcast, but Thursday we'll be up at Flowery Branch exclusive. We'll ask him some of these questions. One thing I didn't understand, Wes, was a perception for me of inconsistency on when we go for it on fourth down and when we don't. You know, I just thought that, you know, you get a gift on that on the offsides. It's now fourth and two at midfield. I just felt that we've seen him go for it in even less advantageous field position. So, I mean, I'm curious why there's some inconsistency there.
Well, the thing with me about the fourth and two, and you're talking about you punt it and not kick the field goal or punt it and not go for it, right?
Punt it, not go for it. Right.
Yeah. To me, you're looking at time and space and, you know, defensively now, see, to Carl's point, you're playing well, right? I mean, except for the explosives. So go ahead and punt it, see what you get out of it, see if you can get a stop, trap them deep, and maybe win the field and have a fresh start, and don't change the game. Problem was you punted it and gave up the score.
Right.
That was the issue, I think, more than anything else. And look, the four touchdowns, okay?
And you also, and by the way, you also gave up, you punt from the 47, and you don't get good field position because it's a touchback. So you net like 35 yards on the kick.
If that, yeah. And I would argue, I would point this out too. The fact that you gave up four touchdowns in four straight possessions in the second half is the reason you lost the game.
Yep, yep.
All the stuff that went in the first 30 minutes, you tied the game up at 21, right? I mean, you know, you survived the start of the second half, maybe not getting exactly what you wanted, but then you tied the game at 21. The game was fresh and in front of you when the other stuff did not the other stuff didn't capture. You didn't capture it. You left all that stuff hanging out there, and that's probably got to be the most frustrating part of this for everybody involved: fans, broadcasters, players, coaches, the whole nine yards. Is that all of a sudden they went on a run at the back end of the game that you couldn't stop, nor could you counterpunch to it, and that's probably the part that, you know, is sticking in the craw. But again, you go back to where you are in the season. You cannot let that linger now, right? You have to absolutely focus on winning these last four games. And it may take, Carl and Mike, winning the last four.
Yep.
And that's something we weren't thinking about that a month ago, I can tell you that.
Wes, last thing for me. Who do you like in this tournament now that we know the 12 teams? Who do you like?
I like somebody from one of the first round games to get to the semifinals.
Okay.
How's that?
Okay. There will be an upset. I agree.
Yeah, I think somebody who plays in the first round is getting to the semifinals, and I'm not. And if you call me when we get to the quarterfinals, I might be able to give you the team I think that could go through to the finals. Mm. Okay, injuries are going to be a part of this. You're going to see it play out right now with Carson Beck, even though they don't play for what, 3 weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. Injuries are going to be a factor in this thing. They're going to be a factor for more than just Georgia. They're going to be a factor with everybody. The environment of the on-campus games, I think I said this to you guys a month ago, I think it's going to be unique to college football. We've never seen anything like it, and I'm going to be interested to see what road team can win, because a road team will win one of these four, I think.
I think you agree, Wes.
Just a matter of which one.
And, Wes, I think we'll see it maybe 16 as soon as next year. But one thing for certain,
won't be next year.
But, Wes, the way the quarterfinals are set up, there's no way a team like Boise State with the 89th worst schedule in the country should be getting a bye and in the quarterfinals. They got to sing for their supper.
I'm going to have to come in studio in the spring or something. We'll just sit there, and I'll discuss with you why people like Boise State are in the top four and how all this works. And Ward Manuel walked himself into a jail cell last Tuesday night. Okay?
Right. Now he boxed himself into a corner with the stuff by saying they were going to be static if you weren't in the college football, if you weren't in your conference playoff, a championship.
And he did enough damage
that I think there is building momentum to scrap the last ranking show prior to the conference championships, where you would release the poll the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Follow me on this, okay? You'd release the poll Tuesday before Thanksgiving. You would play the final week of the regular season. You would not have any sort of poll between the end of the regular season and the end of the championship game. Because what you did not want to do, you did last week. And that was, you gave – if those championship games were not good last week, okay? And let's say that people that participate in conference championship games, let's say they weren't as good as Clemson, SMU, Georgia, Texas, and Penn State, Oregon being one possession roughly games or at the horn or overtime, right? You only had one of those get away from you, and that was the Iowa State game against Arizona State. But when you start thinking about the conference championship game, those are financial investments and wins for those schools and the conferences, right?
But the Mountain West, you can't stack the Mountain West.
Tuesday night, they were useless.
But you can't stack the Mountain West up against the other, let's be honest, Big 12, ACC, even the ACC. Mountain West is not, it's not.
Well, I appreciate you giving me even the ACC, Mike.
Even the ACC. Yeah, because this year is the year you say even the ACC, because it's a bad year for the ACC.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, listen, Clemson's playing well. It's going to be interesting.
Got two in, Mike.
It's going to be interesting.
A week ago, wasn't sure they're going to let any of us in.
Right? Wes, looking forward to the Monday night game. We got to get back right.
You guys coming to Vegas, right?
No.
You guys do Vegas?
No, Mike? We're not.
No, Wes, we're patriotic. We'll be at Army-Navy, unlike you.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, man. But we are.
Hey, Carl, I give you a lot of respect for wearing that burnt orange in the building on Saturday.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do, baby. I mean, look, at the end of the day, Georgia fans know where I'm at.
Earl Campbell, Ricky Williams.
364 days of the year, I'm all about UGA.
Right.
Not so much. Hey, but it was a great game. I'll say that. And by the way, those two teams have a chance to win, play again, which is crazy.
Third time. Sure. Let's go three times.
We'll see. All right, we got to run,
Ollie,
man.
Ollie Frazier. All right, take care.
You too, Wes. Wes Durham, the voice of Atlanta Falcons.
A truculent Wes today.
Coming up, we're going to hear what Turtles got. Yeah, man, no man's on the way. Lots of stuff happening today. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about Carson Beck. We're going to talk to our buddy Seth Emerson about the Dogs, and we'll get his take on everything that's going on right now as they prepare for the college football playoff. Turtles next. Turtle, what is going on? How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. Well, the winter meetings are going on.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
What?
What?
So ESPN put out this big article, 2024 MLB winter meetings, updates, rumors, predictions, and live tracker. So I was like, heck yeah. Let me go see what the Braves are up to. Do an old control F. Put in Braves.
All right.
Zero results.
Yeah, well, we knew the salary was going to jump up, Carl. All these contracts that were such sweetheart deals are starting to mature.
True.
And, I think you got a window, and I know that the Soto thing doesn't guarantee the Mets anything, because if so, obviously the Dodgers would have seven World Series in a row by spending the most. But you just feel like there's an arms race, and we're not in it, right?
I agree. And I also think... You know, this idea that all we need to do is get everybody back healthy and we're going to be fine. You still got to add pieces. Listen, I think telling the best general manager, and I still think he is, okay, and Alex Anthopoulos, he's hit more than he's missed, and this team has been uber successful. But you can't go into any offseason and just go, well, we got to get healthy and we'll be fine. You continue to add, especially as you look around. And by the way, I said this a few weeks back because we hadn't been talking a lot of baseball, and, you know, it's not time. But the Dodgers' rotation is about to be sick. Speaking of getting healthy, not only do they get Shohei Ohtani back, guys, they've got legitimately, and I'm not making this up, seven quality starters.
Seven.
Mike, any of these guys could go to any other team. I'm not even talking about Kershaw, who may or may not be back. He says he's coming back, and they're going to sign him. But seven guys that would go to any other team and be a legitimate number one or number two guy. That is their rotation. So on top of the lineup with – The Freddies of the world who had surgery, by the way, and all the things that you look at there, their pitching is outrageous. That is what concerns me more than anything. If you say, who do we have to go through? Forget about the Mets. I'm not worried about that team. Is loaded.
Right. And we're talking about maybe you bring Charlie Morton back, maybe Nathan Eovaldi. It's just like, look, I get it. The Chris Sale thing was a master stroke by AA, and that's awesome. And Ronaldo Lopez, we spent time on yesterday. But right now, guys, Schwellenbach, right? And then you get to, okay, Strider is kind of coming back. We just don't know exactly what he's going to. I would love to see the Braves spend on the pitching. They won't. By the way, real quick, Chris, as a sidebar, Taylor Ward from the Angels. A couple guys brought that up. Dave O'Brien talked about that, and then they said that's not going to happen. And then also Dave said, how about Jurickson Profar from the Padres?
Okay.
As an upgrade in left field.
Okay.
You know, and then for, and just saying that it is what it is with Kelnick, and he's just, you know, he's just inconsistent, and he's a role player off the bench.
Yeah, so here's the deal, well, and this is what I think. I mean, this
told
is not
so.
This is not no, this is not me, like, you know, lobbying for Kelnick. I give everybody a chance.
Bump.
He's cheap, guys. I keep saying this. You have him under salary control. To upgrade and spend that money, Mike, there, I think is silly. Roll him out there. You've got extra help. You're going to bring in some other pieces. That is not the most pressing issue to make this team the best team in the National League.
But you're hoping and you're banging that Acuna comes back and gets right back to Acuna-type average stats, which, I mean, we don't think he's going to fall off the planet, but there's still a bit of an if involved in that conversation.
Same with Strider.
No, no doubt.
You have no idea. I mean, he's had a couple of major.
But just to tell me, like, we're going to go spend $6 or $8 million because we want to upgrade to Kelnick. That ain't it, guys.
Well, I mean, but Kelnick, 231 with 50, you got to find a better, then you got to find a better buddy for Kelnick in the platoon. You know, but that's why, I mean, in this day and age, under $10 million isn't a bad deal. Now, I'm with you. I wanted to upgrade off Arcia. They're not. I want to get more production. They're not, because there's no cheap shortstops out there. So, yeah, I just felt the bottom three in this lineup had been such a strong suit, including the World Series year, and then it's not anymore. It's just a weakness.
Go back at the end of – look at the last 3.5, 4 months of the season and look at who the bottom of the lineup was last year and how many guys we ran out there. I mean, literally, and half of those guys aren't – we didn't retain their services.
No, but RC and Murphy are guys that are part of your core, and they don't hit.
Now they are, but I also think the other guys we brought in –
right, well, those are the injuries. But I'm just saying, of your – take two-thirds of your bottom of your lineup can't hit. Just don't on a consistent level. That's my beef with RC and my beef. And you know how I feel about Murph.
I know.
If I never see him again in a Braves uniform, it'll be too soon.
I get back to the, and this is my take on this. RC, we're not complaining about him if everybody else was hitting and doing their job. Right.
But in a year where, but again, I just felt like in a year where, okay, I do have regulars that are under contract. I know it's a sweetheart of a deal with RC, but he gave me nothing. That's my beef.
He's calling shenanigans. Joel Klatt of Fox Sports is saying, quote, manipulation was done to get SMU in over Alabama. Here's the quote. I do believe that they manipulated what their process actually is to get SMU in this playoff. They put them in at 11, one spot higher than the team that actually beat them, which also doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But that's what they gave us. It's an artificial floor. Yeah, man, no, man. You buying to shut everybody up about the three-loss tide, they did what they had to do.
Carl, I just said don't lose to bad Oklahoma and bad, you know, Vandy. No Alabama fan, in a million years would have thought they were going to lose three games this year. So you can't rationalize it. It's like the year that Georgia lost to the two best teams on their schedule. That doesn't make you – that's not a resume builder, let alone two of the worst teams you played, right?
Yeah. I don't buy it whatsoever. I just think there's this artificial argument. One, it starts with we're Alabama. That's what it starts with.
It's a brand.
We're Alabama. So we deserve – you don't deserve crap. You earn it. And I don't think they earned it this year. The argument for Bama fans, and this is the one that I keep getting, you know, for people who think I hate Alabama.
Why do you hate Alabama so much?
Dukes, we got three top 25 wins. SMU doesn't have any. That is their argument. And my argument to that is, it's not who you beat. It's who you lost against. And when you lost. And SMU played in their conference championship game.
And when they played in Louisville, they were 22. When they played Pitt was on a heater, they were 18. Now, I know it's nothing to stack up with what Alabama beat, but they do have, at the time, and it does matter at the time, top 25. My argument yesterday, I think you agree with me, is if SMU had gotten trucked, if Clemson had continued the beatdown, then Alabama would have been in. But the fact that SMU took it to the wire kept them alive. You buy that?
I think...
If Clemson beats them by 14 or more, I think
the committee looked at that differently with the way the game played out. And it didn't have anything to do with a walk-off field goal. That was great, and they won the game. It was more about how competitive they were.
But that's
Alabama
still,
was not competitive at Oklahoma.
Right.
Go look at the score. Go watch the game again. Like, you're supposed to be a team that's dominant and one of the best 12 teams in the country. And you laid an egg in that moment, like that did not look good. And the committee looked at that and said, no, we can't do this. And again, three losses should matter. versus one or two. Right. This is easy math to me. I don't know. Joel Klatt is wrong on this.
I'll just play devil's advocate and say, look, you know, you got beat by a mediocre Clemson team, even though it's a great story for Dabo to basically say, screw all you guys. I think I don't know what I'm doing anymore in the portal. But you still lost to South Carolina. You still got boat raced by Georgia to start the season, and that's a team you couldn't handle. Neutral site, sort of kind of a home game for Clemson. I just felt that SMU had to show up to stick. I think that's what the committee was looking for, just for them to show up in that game.
Well,
and they did more than that.
Well, here's the thing. It's like Boise. Everybody says they're not any good. They played Oregon to the wire at the beginning of the season, and everybody said, oh, it was a fluke. And then they fly through their season, and now they're in. People said the same thing about SMU. They're not any good. You get into this conference championship game with a proven program in Clemson that's won national championships, and you do that? Like, you can't just dismiss it.
Dan Lanning almost pulled the Dan Lanning in that Boise State game. But, I mean, it'll be very curious because, like, they've set this thing up where there's some certain teams have got a super easy route to get to this thing. And I still think it kind of favors Notre Dame. I mean, although Notre Dame goes to George, scratch that. It certainly favors Penn State. Penn State certainly, I think, they're the ones who got the best bargain out of all this.
Yeah, because Notre Dame doesn't have to play in a conference championship game. I mean, they can do exactly what they did. We can win 11 games and chill, and we're just going to get in regardless. These teams that played in these conference championship games and Alabama didn't should matter. That's where I'm at, Turtle.
All right, Oren, get Tyler from Spartanburg on the line to settle this.
But, I mean, if I told you, if you're Penn State, you get to play SMU and Boise State to get to the semis, I'll take that.
In a heartbeat.
Right.
No, in a heartbeat. We're going to talk to Seth Emerson, guys. He writes for The Athletic about the SEC and the Dogs. We're going to talk to him about Carson Beck and much more when we come back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour is brought to you by our friends at Mark Spain Real Estate.